Now, I've been teaching on the pyramid, reading primarily the last couple of weeks from Adam Rutherford, his four-volume series entitled Pyramidology. One thing should be coming through clear. Move that thing that way. Yeah. One thing should be coming through clear. By the way, Robin Williams didn't have a cigar. He didn't do his research all the way. Even Bill Cosby, when he did his Las Vegas act on cigar smokers, included me in that. And my freedom stick. Don't leave that out if you're going to do a presentation of me. Your brain will never be warm enough to handle the subject. One thing should be clear. What tradition has told us about the development of man from rather stupid and primitive to the present age is just a crock. There was a real smart source of information that planned the pyramid, lined it up to true north, clearly understood the earth was a sphere, the dimensions of the earth, the exact distance from the north to the south pole, which we can calculate now with satellites, the distance from the earth to the sun, the 3 years determined by the heavenly bodies, the solar, the sidereal, and the anomalistic, the precession of the equinoxes. Now, the engineering skill is a marvel, but the astronomical knowledge required a source of knowledge that we have not in tradition credited to the ancient cultures. Now, as we've said several times, Josephus in the first century said that the descendants of Seth, and it seems sort of incongruous to say the descendants of Seth, unless you're antediluvian, pre-flood. Otherwise, you talk about the descendants of Noah or one of his sons, all of whom were descendants of Seth. So it doesn't make much sense to reference the descendants of Seth, plus the fact, anticipating from a prophecy of Adam, that the earth would be destroyed both by flood and fire, water and fire, built a place to perpetuate and store their knowledge, a kind of time capsule, twice. One of brick near Mesopotamia, one of stone, which in the first century AD, when Josephus was writing, he said was still standing in Egypt in his day. That could only be the pyramid. And it was to preserve a knowledge. Now we move from the packaging of the pyramid, the wondrous astronomical knowledge contained therein, and mathematical knowledge contained therein, built upon pi, for example, to the interior passages, are amazed at the perfect alignment that occurred once in the some 25 to 26,000 year precession of the equinoxes, when the plane of the dragon constellation, particularly the star Thuban and the strongest star, Alpha Draconis, was perfectly aligned until it would shine down the descending passage of the pyramid. And the scored lines put there to mark a benchmark perfectly aligned with the pyramids, that happens once, 2441 B.C. The measuring unit of the pyramid being 1/500,000,000, now we're going to go through this again tonight. It's either too cold or too hot. Too cold now. 1/500,000,000th of the distance from the north to the south pole through the center of the earth, those inches marked off from the benchmark portray the downward course of mankind under the influence of the dragon, Satan, perfectly marking the upward turn, God's interference with Satan's control, the exodus out of Egypt, perfectly marking the birth plus the death and resurrection of Christ, and many more significant historic dates in the history of mankind and this earth. Somebody real smart knew something. Now, it will appear tonight that I'm going to shift from the pyramid for a minute. I'm not. I will give evidence further down as we attempt to prove what I believe is the case, that the pyramid was built long before the reign of Cheops. And that Cheops, or Khufu, depending on whether you use his Greek or Egyptian name, identified with the pyramid, but he didn't build it. And as we've said, which is obvious, it never was a place of burial, and his body was buried elsewhere. Later in this series, to show the antiquity of the pyramid beyond Khufu, I'm going to show you from records in ancient Sumer in Akkadia, perhaps based on present archaeology, the oldest civilizations ever to exist, that they had knowledge of the pyramid in Egypt. Still too cold. And if they had knowledge of the pyramid in Egypt, and they existed long before Cheops, doubtful he built it. Turn that thing off for a minute. I'm going to sneeze. God, I wish we could hire the builders of the pyramid to work on this air conditioning system in here. Now, as part of that process, and to get us ready for proving the more ancient date and a possible demonstration of Enoch's building of the pyramid before the flood of the line of Seth, thus making Josephus' statement accurate, I want to read from one of the most far-out authors that's written in recent generations. He got some wild ideas. But like Velikovsky, he does some of the most thorough research, the product of 30, 40 years research, that you'll find anywhere. I'm talking about Zachariah Sitkin. He has written 3 books. He calls them the Earth Chronicles. The first one was The 12th Planet. Now you all go out and empty the bookstores of it now. The second was The Stairway to Heaven. You'll remember that because it was in The Stairway to Heaven, and we spent about a week on it, that he gave the convincing proof and evidence that Colonel Vice forged the cartouche of Cheops, which has been used to prove that it was built during Cheops' reign. Vice was a forger. The third book he has written, The Wars of Gods and Men. An interesting little, if I marked it, there's an interesting little comment in it. I think I didn't mark it. But anyway, after his book was published, proving Vice a forger, a member of the family of one who had worked with Vice and gave evidence of his forgery and was fired and banned from the site and not allowed to work, came forward to give further evidence of Vice's forgery. I'll get to that when we talk about the knowledge of the pyramid among the Sumerians. He got four out theories, but his research is impeccable. And as in the Stairway to Heaven, we read that section. And you can buy the book if you want. Some of you did, but it ain't going to do much for you. Because I take the research from the book and fit it into what we're doing. Whereas he takes that research and makes it support his four-op theory. Of beings from outer space who came to this earth and populated it and brought this knowledge and helped start the mess which we are. Now, before you reject that utterly, beings from outer space, if this earth is considered space and anything out there is outer, certainly are suggested by the Bible. I mean, angels didn't come out of gopher holes. Is this going to be the Tuesday night crowd? Did you change crowds on me? You look like I'm boring you and haven't even started.
Yes,
give me a break. I get good at boring a little later. How could anybody do a legitimate impression of me without a cigar? And it is very clear in the book of Genesis that the sons of God came down from somewhere and saw the women on this earth and mated with them, produced giants, and created problems. Where did they come from? They didn't come from gopher holes. And Elijah took off in a chariot of fire. And an angel came down and killed a whole mess of soldiers under Sennacherib. And God himself came down and talked to Moses on Mount Sinai. But we have this special set of spiritual gears we put in our head. That when the Bible's talking about it, it's some kind of mixture. Well, it happened, but it really didn't happen. I mean, you know, don't bother me with the details. Where was God before he landed on Mount Sinai? And where did he go when he left? Now, don't give me this business of, you know, going into some dimension and coming back through it. That would suffice as outer space. They were here and then they weren't. And they weren't and then they were here. And it's very clear in Genesis, God came down in the cool of the evening and talked. Indeed, the original is God's. Elohim, in the plural. Came down in the cool of the evening, walked and talked with Adam and Eve. And when they messed up and were hiding because of their nakedness, he killed an animal and skinned it, and gave them animal skin clothing. Now, who were those guys that came and talked to Abraham on the way to annihilating Sodom and Gomorrah? And where were they before they got there, and where'd they go after they got the burning job done? I mean, you know, heavenly pyromaniacs. Well, you don't look at the Bible like that. You know, you just, they're there when the chapter comes along and the verse comes along, and then they're gone. So, you know, these four-out theories aren't much more four-out than the Bible. And I believe the Bible. So I'm not against supernatural beings from outer space having contact with Earth. My Lord God of mercy. You ain't ever seen a UFO, Max, the one Ezekiel saw. And what about that angel that came and fought the princes of Persia and delivered his message to Daniel? And he went back, and the prince of Persia was no more, and the prince of Grecia comes. And he talks about wars, where Michael stood with him once, or he stood with Michael once, now Michael's standing with him. And there's sure as hell going to be an invasion from outer space when I come back with Jesus at the end of the Armageddon. That's when I'll understand it all. And you, I hope. Evangelical fundamentalism, as he's been expecting for a long time, rapture of the church, meeting in the air, and away you go, where? And don't talk to me about up, you know. If you're on the wrong side of the globe when the rapture takes place, you're going to bore through it or sail around it. And they all come back with Jesus. Jacob had a vision of a ladder. Heaven and the earth, well, yes, that's a vision, yeah. But it's no wilder than the accounts of that which is not visionary. So even though this guy's got some four-out ideas, he's not crazy. And his research is impeccable. Let us review the history of our own knowledge of Earth and the heavens around it, since we're the smart 20th century generation. I'm not departing from the pyramid. The knowledge that the pyramid builders had, so superior to anybody today, was not unique to that little spot in Egypt. And let me show it to you by reviewing the history of our own knowledge of the earth and the heavens around it, and then check it against something else. We know today that beyond the giant planets Jupiter and Saturn, at distances, I'm reading from the 12th planet, the first of this trilogy, book one of the Earth Chronicles. We know today that beyond the giant planets Jupiter and Saturn, at distances insignificant in terms of the universe, but immense in human terms, two more major planets, Uranus and Neptune. I'm smiling because I had a luncheon with some very prominent people and with some scientists, Nobel Prize winners from Mount Wilson Observatory. And one distinguished guest at the table didn't hear very well. And he was not primarily a scientist. He was an attorney. And one of the Nobel Prize winners wanted to start a conversation at his end of the table on that which he was a specialist in. And the space probe had just gone past Uranus. Looked around at this guy and said, "What do you think of Uranus?" And you can imagine the response of the hard of hearing. No, I'm not going to tell you. We know today that beyond the giant planets Jupiter and Saturn, two more major planets, Uranus and Neptune, and a third small one, Pluto, belong to our solar system. But such knowledge, like pi, for example, in mathematics, such knowledge is quite recent, considering the history of man. Uranus was discovered through the use of improved telescopes in 1781. A.D. After observing it for some 50 years, some astronomers reached the conclusion that its orbit revealed the influence of yet another planet because of an effect on the orbit that suggested a gravitational pull in a certain direction. Guided by such mathematical calculations, the missing planet named Neptune was pinpointed by astronomers in 1846. Then, by the end of the 19th century, it became evident that Neptune itself was being subjected to unknown gravitational pull. Was there yet another planet in our solar system? The puzzle was solved in 1930. The year after I was born, with the observation and location of Pluto. The year I was born, they didn't know Pluto existed. Thus, up to 1780, and for centuries before that, people believed there were seven members of our solar system. The Sun, the Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. Earth was not counted because it was believed that these other celestial bodies circled the Earth. Up to 1780. Circled the Earth, the most important celestial body created by God, obviously, with God's most important creation, man, on it. Thus, when I was born, the world, modern world, did not know that Pluto existed. That discovery was made in 1930. All those years since the pyramid was built passed before we could discover Pluto. Up to 1780, and for centuries before that, people believed there were seven members of our solar system. Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. I'm reading from The 12th Planet by Zachariah Sitkin. One of three of his books called The Earth Chronicles. The Earth was not counted as a planet because it was believed that these other celestial bodies circled Earth. Obviously, the most important celestial body created by God, with God's most important creation, man, placed thereon. Our textbooks generally credit Nicholas Copernicus with the discovery that Earth is only one of several planets in a heliocentric or sun-centered, not Earth-centered, system. fearing the wrath of the Christian church, those who have continued to close the minds in the name of God and thus degrade God's purposes in giving us revelation. Fearing the wrath of the Christian church for challenging Earth's central position, Copernicus published his study only when on his deathbed in 1543. Spurred to re-examine centuries-old astronomical concepts primarily by the navigational needs, turn me up a little, of the age of discovery, and by the findings of Columbus, Magellan, and others that Earth was not flat but spherical, Copernicus depended on mathematical calculations and searched for the answers in ancient writings, no less. One of the few churchmen who supported Copernicus, Cardinal Schoenberg, wrote to him in 1536, quote, "I have learned that you know not only the groundwork of the ancient mathematical doctrines, but that you have created a new theory, according to which the earth is in motion and it is the sun, which occupies the fundamental and therefore the cardinal position," end quote. The concepts then held were based on Greek and Roman traditions that Earth, which was flat, was, quote, vaulted over, end quote, by the distant heavens in which the stars were fixed. Against the star-studded heavens, the planets, from the Greek word for wanderer, moved around the Earth. There were thus seven celestial bodies from which the 7 days of the week and their names originated. The sun, Sunday, moon, Monday, Mars, Mardi, in the French, Mercury, Mercredi, Jupiter, Judy, Venus, Vendredi, and Saturn, Saturday. These astronomical notions stem from the work and codifications of Ptolemy, an astronomer in the city of Alexandria, Egypt, in the 2nd century A.D. His definite findings were that the sun, moon, and five planets moved in circles around the earth. Ptolemaic astronomy predominated for more than 1,300 years, until Copernicus put the sun in the center. Well, we've been a smart bunch during the Common Era. While some have called Copernicus the father of modern astronomy, others view him more as a researcher and reconstructor of earlier ideas. The fact is that he pored over the writings of Greek astronomers who preceded Ptolemy.
This is the end of Side 1.